Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guests for this Hold on a second. This is the second roundtable discussion we've had this week. First roundtable discussion we had was on Wednesday, discussing psychopaths with Thomas Sheridan, Jay Widener, and James Corbett. I recommend everybody, and underline that, everybody, go and listen to that interview because it's freaking amazing. It is a revelation, all right? Not unlike the Bible. And my very special guests today are going to be talking about a related topic called archons, right? Which means rulers. It's been talked about in the Gnostic writings, and we reference this in the psychopath discussion. So that's one element that we did touch on during the discussion about psychopaths, and now we're going to display the other side, that which is a little bit less well understood by the general public. The reason why we're doing this is because this might just be the most important sociological subject in human history. Why? Because these archontic psychopathic entities are in control of society. And only once the methodologies, behavior, so on and so forth of these creatures is learned and educated into the populace, can we actually do anything about it and bring society back under the control of those who are not ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery. Now, my guests are Robert Stanley, Evie Logan, and Cameron Day. So I'd like them to introduce themselves one at a time. Evie, let's start with you. Could you please tell us who you are, what you do, and if you have a website or something of that nature, please give it a wee plug.
Okay. I'm also known as Eve Lorgan. My website is evelorgan.com. I've written two books. The most recent book is called The Dark Side of Cupid, about love affairs, the supernatural, and energy vampirism, which actually is a lot about what I call the energy vampirism that can take place in relationships when one of the partners is taken over or overshadowed by an entity of some sort. So you can call it a type of archontic interference, and I can go into that in more detail in the show. I also work with anomalous trauma, mostly alien abductions, MILABs, spiritual warfare, and unusual things. So that's basically what I do, and I'll let you go from here.
And you're currently on holiday at the moment, and if there's anybody around you who's likely to make noise during the broadcast, quietly tell them to,
keep quiet.
You know, right. Sorry about that.
All right, and let's go to Robert Stanley. Robert, please introduce yourself and give your website a plug if necessary.
Well, hello, Vinny. Nice to talk to you, finally. My name's Robert Stanley. I'm an author, talk show host, and I'm also a special correspondent for America's Morning News out of Washington, D.C. So I've written a couple books, and my website is unicusmagazine.com. It's spelled U-N-I-C-U-S magazine.com.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that you actually specialize in terms of information?
UFOs, extraterrestrials.
Okay. And Cameron Day as well. Cameron, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Vinny. It's great to be here.
All right. Now, please just let us know just a little bit about yourself and your website if possible.
Sure. So my website is ascensionhelp.com. That's ASCENSIONHELP.com. I specialize in helping people to get clear, to let go of suppressed hidden traumas or blatant traumas, whatever the trauma might be, whatever the hang-up or blockage is. I help them to address it, clear it, and to connect more deeply with their true self, otherwise known as the higher self or the divine inner self.
Okay, so let's get started by answering the simple question by which we're going to preface this conversation, this roundtable discussion. what is an archon? Who would like to answer that first?
I'll answer it. This is Eve Lorgan. The archon is actually originally a notation found in the Nag Hammadi library tractates of the Gnostic literature, which are rulers of some sort that interfere with humanity. They're actually part of Sophia, who is the eon who plunged and became our living planet. But the archons are notorious for copycatting and interfering and mind parasiting humans in such a way that they cause us to deviate from our divine potential and get stuck on religious ideology, which really throws us off. So really one of the main, signatures of the archons is religious ideology and certain kinds of mind patterns. So this is really apparent in psychopaths and what I see with what I call the hosted and possessed or partially possessed individuals that do energy vampirism. So that's really a short end of it. So maybe somebody else might have a comment about what their view is on archons.
Robert, I'd like to hear what your take is on this.
Sure. I have an article with photographs of one specific type of archon that seems to be misidentified by other researchers in the field. They said specifically there was one that was reptilian and another one that looked like an amoeba, an embryo. It actually looks more like an amoeba to me, at least the pictures that I have. So if you go to unicusmagazine.com and click on articles, it'll be the second link down, and it says Meet Our Covert Controllers, the Archons.
So did they have an actual physical presence, or is this an ethereal entity that we're dealing with here, a non-physical entity?
Yes, it's apparently a non-physical entity that affects our physical nature through our consciousness. It influences us to do harm to ourselves or others so we can feed off the negative energy generated in the process.
So it actually has a sort of like a nutritional requirement in that regard. It needs negative energy to survive, whereas that's the antithesis to humanity, who needs positive energy to survive, correct?
Right. It's parasitic. It is a parasite. Amoebas are technically considered a parasite, a genus of parasite. And just briefly, I wanted to share something with you I found recently, which actually confirms what I've suspected for a while, is Sir Fred Hoyle. He was an astrophysicist at the Royal Astronomical Society. In 1971, he said that human beings are simply pawns in the game of alien minds that control our every move. They're everywhere in the sky, on the sea, and on the earth. It's not an alien intelligence from another planet. It's actually from another universe, which entered ours at the very beginning and has been controlling all that has happened since. So I don't think I've been saying they're not from here and they're just trying to survive. So this is why they do what they do. And, they're becoming exposed more and more as we talk about this and show the pictures of them. It's really apparent that evil is an infection that is affecting a lot of people, obviously. And that's why we're having this conversation.
Now, one of the discussions we had with psychopaths yesterday is that they all agreed, the panelists agreed,
yes,
that this is possible of, this is capable of infecting people.
Yes.
Now, I wondered, and this is my question, is the physical presence of an archon required for the infection, or is it possible that it can be digitally transcribed? An archon could be a radio show host or something of that nature and actually infect its audience.
Well, a lot of people, and including extraterrestrials, are infected, whether they know it or not, and therefore they are affecting people around them. You see, so even if some of these amoeba-like entities attach themselves, let's just say, to me, then I can in turn have an effect on a people around me, which causes them to generate. Like I said, I'm either hurting myself or others around me, and that generates the food that they feed off. You know, the movie The Matrix was probably the best metaphor for what's going on here. And like I said, these things probably came, in my opinion, came from outside our universe. And once they got here, they had to survive. So they figured a way to feed off of negative energy generated by us. Yeah, there's a picture of one. That's an infrared picture from the 1950s, I believe. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I'm putting these pictures back on the television. Those in the radio audience, unfortunately, you won't be able to see what we're looking at here. But essentially what we are viewing is, as you said, it looks like a sort of a floating bacteria in the background. How exactly does it attach? Because this would imply that it actually is not just a non-physical entity, that it actually does have a physical presence. And all physical entities, as far as I know, have a they have nutritional requirements or environmental factors. Like, do you know what their weaknesses are? You know, would they be poisoned by arsenic like we would, or would they be poisoned by cyanide or something of that nature? Or are they, these things considered nutrients to these creatures?
Not that I know of. Like I said, as far as I know, all they feed off of is negative energy in, coming out of our body in the form of a specific frequency of light. Our bodies are constantly emitting light. The DNA actually emits light. But when we're damaged or traumatized, we actually emit a different frequency of light. I guess William Reich was familiar with this, and so he called it Orgon or D-O-R. So there was, he's delineated between two very, one very positive symbiotic energy as opposed to a very negative parasitic energy that these things seem to be attracted to. So Reich was using these, William Reich was using these cloudbusters to, and they, this is when these things started to show up. And apparently, yeah, they don't like positive energy, obviously laughter. They don't like laughter, any kind of happy, positive emotions. They really don't like that at all. And they really don't want to be exposed either, by the way.
Does it hurt them?
Well, I don't know if they have feelings in that regard. I think it scares them because they're really just on a survival mode, in my opinion. They're not, they don't belong here. The creator of this universe didn't actually create them. They just found a way into this universe and started to spread the infection. And actually, you know, there's a lot of the destruction and the insanity that followed was, well, there was no immunity to it. People in this universe really had never seen anything like that before. So it took quite a while before they started to actually take action and protect themselves and start to rehabilitate this universe and the various all the life forms in it.
Mm-hmm. Cameron, what's your take on this?
Well, to answer your question in a little more detail about their nutrient needs, they do feed on energy. They're in a plane or an energetic density that's slightly more refined than ours. But when you're in that density, you still have a perceived physicality. So you can interact with these beings, for instance, in your dream state. And often many people do. They just aren't aware of what's going on. And so what feeds them is our energy. Often fear is their most preferred food source. Because when we're afraid, we're literally leaking our power, and we're usually giving that power to someone else. So that gives them a bit of dominance over us.
Can I perform an analogy here? I presume you're familiar with sun gazing. There's certain people who are capable of staring into the sun, usually in the morning when it's not quite strong enough, and the amount of photons that come through the iris are actually capable of sending an electric charge along the optic nerve and indeed fuel the body without the need for ingesting and converting liquids or foods. And so, in essence, they survive via the emission of light. And is this precisely the same mechanism, but perhaps a little bit different, that the Archons survive on, the emission of the light of fear or something of that nature? Is there some form of a prism-type spectrum, like in Pollyanna crystals or something like that? You know, you shoot an emotion through a crystal and it'll come out with certain things because who was that Japanese scientist? I forget his name.
Emoto.
Yeah. So he's proven that just an emotion can actually have an effect on the crystalline structure of water. What do you say to all of that?
Well, yes, that's definitely, those are all aspects of it. Now, the key thing is that these beings actually harvest this energy and they process it even to remove any purity, not impurity, but purity that might still be within that energy. That you've emitted, that we've emitted. And essentially they treat humanity, they treat all third density life like we are, as their cattle, as their food source. So they have mercilessly squeezed humanity for eons of time to produce as much pain, suffering, war, trauma, fear, death, etc., as possible so that we can release that energy in a form that's good for them. Because if we were all acting peacefully towards one another and loving one another, laughing with each other, working together to build a positive world, they would have no food source. We would be literally immune to them at that point.
John Lennon, bang! Martin Luther King, bang!
Correct.
This is what we're talking about, isn't it?
Correct.
And they all said together, live together peacefully in harmony and love one another, and that's why they've been killed.
Right, because that goes against what their food production needs are. They need us to be killing each other, fighting with each other.
Okay. Or just generally irritated, like we see the media is constantly doing to us right here in the States right now. It's just horrendous, but, you know, and it's constant, too.
All right, well, we're constantly surrounded by what appears to be stupidity. Stupidity itself, just in and of itself, is not enough good an explanation for me, because it's too well organized.
Correct.
To come together by accident. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio 5 days a week from 5 till 7 Central. That's 3 till 5 Pacific. Excuse me, 6 till 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you happen to be in Greenwich Mean Time, it is 11 till 1, 8 o'clock in the morning. So that's good for conspiracy theorists who are generally up all night freaking out about being exterminated by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery. And in New Zealand, if you have a job, we are broadcasting live from 10 a.m. till midday. So wear your headphones and keep it secret from your boss, because bosses generally don't like this kind of talk, because it doesn't bow to authority, which has no justification. All right. And my very special guests for this roundtable discussion are Robert Stanley, Eve Logan, and Cameron Day. Now, heading back to this, we were talking about the energy requirements of these creatures, and what we've determined is that they feed off of light energy, and that is broadcasted from your DNA, which is manifested via certain things. Now, I recall what is his name, Michael Tesarian, saying that there is a vibrational difference between emotions, meaning that if you have, say, for example, a waveform, so if it's bumping up and down, you know, you've seen those little things with audio files and things like that. Some of them are really jutty, and they come out like really fast and hard, sort of like dance music, doop 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 doop. And then there's another frequency that is far more long, slow waveform, which is like boom, boom, boom. Now, the slow waveform is the frequency of fear. And what happens is you've got your DNA strands, and for each boom, boom, it'll actually activate certain parts of your DNA. The higher the frequency, the more closer it is to love, the more hits it actually has along your DNA strand along at that point. At least this is what Michael Tesarian has said, and I think he believes. Now, how does this relate, and I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with this this research at all, but how does this relate frequency, vibration, and the emission of light to archons? Who would like to take that one?
Okay, since nobody else is speaking up, I would have to say that you're right, you know, that they do have some sort of tendrils. What with the pictures that you just show, only they're not in their feeding state. They're moving. Castaneda's called them the flyers. They look like, he said they look like flat, dark fish. So people do see them occasionally with their eyes. And they apparently, one of the psychologists that contacted me about schizophrenics that he was working with in a clinical setting, including the prisons, said that these things, he could hear them emitting, or their patients, he said, were actually hearing them doing like just an incredibly loud screeching noise. So that might have something to do with it. And there was also a sort of an electricity involved. So they're energetic. Obviously, everything emits frequencies of, you know, on various levels. And, you know, the other thing was weird. He said that people who were addicted to, like, methamphetamines were seeing these things. And even guys that didn't even know each other were reporting the same thing. So they were somehow, that had altered their consciousness to a state where they were actually elevated, or however you want to call it, where they could peer into that realm. And it's not, the veil between us is really not that thick, as far as I know. You know?
No, it's actually extremely thin. In fact, they operate in that secrecy because we can't perceive them with our very limited light spectrum that our eyes perceive. If we could see just a little bit above that, we'd see them floating around. Mm. Now, people that have trained themselves to see auras can see them as well. The easiest way I've found is to be looking at, let's say, a building or a wall that's fairly light-colored, and then just let your focus be far away on that wall, and then allow people to walk in between you. So say you're at a public place. So you would look at a building maybe across the street, and then as people are walking by, you'll see an energy emission around them. And on some people, you'll see a black fuzz. It almost looks like a black smoke that's following them around. It's kind of latched onto them. You can sometimes even see it on their cars as they drive around. And that's essentially a feeder connected to that person. Now, those little low-level feeders, though, they're feeding, they're sending and transmitting energy up to collection centers for their higher-ups to do it. I mean, those are essentially the automatons, like the little amoeba-type guys that Robert has shown the pictures of before. But those guys do the main low-level feeding. They feed the energy up to a higher level. They're all very hierarchical. That's another aspect of these beings. They're very much like a machine consciousness, like an artificial intelligence type of a collective.
Kind of like the Borg.
Kind of like the Borg.
I'd like to add a comment, is that some of people see the tentacles, like an octopus-like entity within someone when they're hosting something like that. And the tentacles can reach out energetically and pull in energy from other people and affect and manipulate energy from other people. And I also wanted to just reiterate and validate the fact that methamphetamine addicts have reported perceiving reptilians and also becoming possessed by them, and that something to do with methamphetamine will raise their consciousness frequency, brain frequency, so that they're able to perceive and interact with that realm and have that realm actually interact with them and take like partial possession or possession cases. And this is something that Barbara Bartholik found many years ago with working with people where there was waves of UFO activity with reptilian abductions. With people who did methamphetamine, they were more heavily attacked by these energies and entities.
Well, in fact, this is something that I find quite interesting, and I learned about this quite a number of years ago before I even woke up. About methamphetamine users being able to see these, essentially demons. It was called the devil's drug by a number of people. And of course, it was invented by, I believe, the Empire of Japan. And they gave it to their pilots during flying missions and things of that nature, and they found that their pilots started to go crazy and crash themselves into U.S. ships, and these became known as kamikaze pilots. And what occurs to me, and in fact, I tried meth once. I'm going out on a limb here and saying this. I was writing a script about a Santa impersonator who was on methamphetamine, and I wanted to know what it was actually like. And but I didn't want to do it so that I would get addicted. So I decided to do it with somebody who was really badly addicted and actually in a real bad state because of it. He was injecting, and he proceeded to tell me crazy things, completely and utterly insane things, that there's 11 dimensions of reality and he's the only one on earth that can perceive all of them correctly, that he had the Auckland's chief of police drug squad and Satan locked in his basement with surgical tools to see who would come out on top. You know, his knees were juddering so strongly that the fridge in the kitchen was literally rocking back and forth, kind of thing. And the reason why I decided to do it with him is because I would be able to see instantly where I would go had this become a habit for me. I only wanted to try it for once in terms of the research. And this became perhaps one of my early awakening experiences of just how bad this drug really is for people. Ironically enough, it was the most calming and soothing experience for me that I've actually ever had in my life. I'm normally thinking about 11, 12, 13 different things all at the same time, you know, like a rogue star emitting sunspots or whatever. And it got compressed to a singularity. And what I found interesting about that is because it's compressed to a singularity, it means that only you can only really focus on one thing at a time. And I think that's possibly the reason why these people go so completely insane, is because if you've only got one train of thought and you're not able to correct or incorporate other things within it, if you start going down a wrong path, there's nothing to stop you.
Or you may have been having... like with people that take Ritalin, it's not for everybody, but people that are diagnosed as allegedly having ADD, they can't focus on anything till they take the drug, which is an amphetamine, and it helps them to focus. So everybody's different in that regard. But, you know, like, you know, so I'm just saying maybe that was the reaction you were having.
Well, there was that. I tried Ritalin as well when I was in university. Somebody gave me a Ritalin pill, and I took it. And I took it, and I went to work. And unlike meth, instead of actually feeling kind of peace and calm, I felt nothing. It was like everything that I was gone. I had no smiles. I had no thoughts. It was like I was a zombie.
Well, a lot of people never tried that again. A lot of people on Prozac say that or Zoloft, they say that's pretty much the same thing. It's sort of effectively chemically lobotomizing them, cutting off their emotions. Some people say it's like wearing a wetsuit. You know, you can't feel the water. You know, it's like that.
Yeah, and so the reason I think that meth users and drug addicts in general tend to perceive these beings more is they are essentially like throwing chum in the water. They're saying, hey, my energy field is wide open. Come and feed. And so the predators come because they're responding to that blood in the water, that energetic discharge through the chaos of that particular drug, messing with their brain, skewing their, essentially anchoring into third density reality. So if a being is doing something consciously, like, for example, doing a ritual, the various indigenous tribes that do ritualistic dancing for hours and hours, they're doing that to decouple their awareness from third density to shift into a higher density. But they're doing it in a very conscious way so that they can bring back wisdom and information. But if somebody is doing it without awareness and consciousness, they're simply saying, hey, I'm wide open. Come and feed.
And it's a form of abuse. Like I said before, hurt yourself or others. And it will generate this level of energy that they're looking for. They feed off of. And as Cameron was saying, they harvest it on some level, sort of like bees, you know. And I do think that that is a problem in our society, that most of us do not take this into consideration. And therefore, we do nothing to protect ourselves, protect ourselves. And I've actually learned the hard way recently that I wasn't doing enough to protect myself from these entities. Because, you see, they've been after me since 1985 that I know of, because I saw them and I interrupted their feeding. And, well, they got really upset. I mean, with the equivalent of their...
Hold on. Back up the truck. You saw them? What did you see?
The analogy I would be drawing, I saw them in my mind's eye, okay, because there was a boy who was bleeding to death at the beach where I was working security in Malibu. And as I was in the room assisting him and his grandparents, first of all, somehow I knew the boy was hearing voices. As I was talking to his grandmother, he's in the bedroom bleeding to death. I called the paramedics, told them, you have to get here. This is a life or death situation. You have to get here right now. And fortunately, he lived. But the bottom line is, while I was in that room where the trauma occurred, he actually ran into a sliding glass door face first and smashed the whole thing open with his face. And it wasn't safety glass either. It had sliced his whole face open. So as I was in the room, I was in a heightened state of awareness, okay? It wasn't my life that was at risk, but, I mean, that's really traumatic. And blood was everywhere. And, of course, you know, it's like an altered state of consciousness. I mean, it was. And I knew that the boy was hearing the voices that were telling him, you can fly. That's why and at that moment, as I recognized what was going on, in my mind's eye, I saw them floating around the room. They looked like ticks to me, because growing up in Malibu, a lot, you know, people and our pets would get infested with these ticks. And so actually the pictures that we were looking at, it's similar. It's not the same. It's not exactly the same, but that was the analogy I was drawing in my mind. These are parasites. I knew that even back in 1985 as a young man. I was 25 years old, and I got thrown in the deep end of the demon pool. So anyway, and of course they started attacking me. Once I saw them and I knew what they were up to, they started attacking me. And actually they were attacking my solar plexus, and they've been doing that periodically over the years because I've become more and more aware of them, and I've been telling more and more people about them, especially since 2011.
Attack. Oh, wait, in fact, we don't have time. We're coming to break here. Sure. When we come back, I want to actually explore that a little further about how they actually attack you. And also, during the other psychopath discussion, one thing all the panelists also agreed on, not only are these creatures infectious, but you can't fight them. And the only way to actually deal with them is to run. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the most operatic 2 hours in talk radio, right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Okay, now, a number of elements came out during the discussion. First thing I wanted to clarify is what we covered before we went to break was, Robert, you claimed that these entities have attacked you or started to attack you and have consistently started to do so. What are you talking about when you say that they're attacking you? Describe it.
It felt like I could feel it in my solar plexus. It was the best analogy I can give you is like a tub of water. When you pull the plug, it starts draining out, except it was literally draining out of me. All the energy was draining out of me. I had no idea why it was happening. I just knew that they were somehow causing it. So like you said, my intention or my first, I was running on impulse, because who do you call when something like that happens? And
Ghostbusters.
Well, yeah, we call you guys, but I didn't know you then. So anyway, I ended up, it was the equinox. It was the fall equinox of September 21st, 1985. I ended up going up on top of a mountain in Malibu, sitting there as the full moon was rising and the sun was setting. I was literally, you know, you're talking about putting the energy in your eyes. I was tilting my head back and I could actually see the moon and the sun, one in each eye. And then at some point I stopped doing that. I was gazing into the sun as it was setting. And then I started to meditate. Like I said, it was just completely on impulse. I wasn't planning this. Okay. It would never would have happened this way if they hadn't attacked me. So this was an unintended consequence that I tell people. I was sitting there meditating. I was using the sound Om as the carrier wave, and I was sending a beacon out through my body, through my chakras. I was just beaming this thing up into the galaxy, actually into the middle of the Milky Way. And the only thought I had that I was broadcasting was love, because I knew that what I saw was the complete opposite of love, truly evil. What those things were doing to that boy and his grandparents was simply evil, and in my opinion. And so I was hoping that somebody, sort of like it was like an SOS for me. Okay, and I was sitting there and I'm broadcasting this. And at some point after hours of that, I got tired and I laid down on some cement. It was the leftovers of a naval radar installation there on the top of the mountain. And I lay on the cement and popped right out of my body. And I went into the light. Actually, it was just light. Everywhere I looked, it was light, which was great, because at that point, those things were not, they could not attack me any further. But shortly after that, there was something coming towards me. I didn't know what it was. And as it got closer, I realized I could see it was a man. Now, Eve, I know you've got a picture of something like this, but...
Oh, yeah, the primordial man, yes.
The primordial man, okay. But I'd never seen that until after I talked to you. But anyway, in 1985, I'm looking at this guy, and he's standing in front of me, and he's brighter than the light around us. There's literally light coming off of him, including his eyes, like that picture that Eve has from Italy. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, who is this? And he says to me, I'm your father. And I'm like, what? I mean, that did not make any sense.
Did he do it like in a James Earl Jones voice?
I wish he had. Star Wars. I don't think Star Wars. Yeah, I guess Star Wars would come out. Look, no, it has. He wasn't Darth Vader. And he didn't look like my father either, which, again, none of this made sense to me. I had no context for any of this. I'm just telling you. So he started laughing, not in a sinister way, but he was laughing. He thought it was funny. I mean, in retrospect, I guess, hey, look, I'm calling help, help, help. Help shows up, and he's like, hey, don't you remember me? I'm your father. I'm like, what? You know, excuse me? Makes no sense at all, right? So do you want me to – are you ready for the rest of the story, or should we go on to something else?
I say we quickly finish this vein.
Okay, because I tell this to people all the time. And anyway, so here's what happened. Went back to work. He's laughing. I snap awake. I thought I was just having a vision, and then I was, immediately woke up from it. No, at least three hours had gone by based on the position of the moon now, okay? And I knew something else had happened, but I couldn't remember what it was. I had zero memory of other than seeing him, and that was it. But so I went back to work the next morning. I go to the house, and I check just to see if the boy's still alive. I was very worried. I thought he could have died in the ambulance. So I go over there, I talk to the grandparents. They're like, yeah, you know, he lost a lot of blood, had over 300 stitches in his face, but he's going to live. I'm like, oh, okay, good. And then I gave him this message. I really couldn't understand why I said this. You can heal the scars on his face, but unless you heal the scars on his soul, this will happen again. Lately, I'm starting to have some weird, vague memory of actually going back there with this guy. He said he's my father. I think we actually visited him in another dimension, and we did work to get rid of the parasites. But at that point, that's when I saw the scars on his soul, and there was nothing I could do about it. Apparently, this guy with me couldn't do it or wouldn't do it either, and that's why I was compelled to deliver that message. I mean, with deep conviction. By the way, there's nothing religious about it. I was just stating as a matter of fact. And even afterwards, I'm like, why did I say that? Those poor people, now he just survived a life-threatening event. Now I'm telling him they got to heal the scars on his soul? I mean, it just didn't make any sense to me at the time.
Okay.
No.
Well, see, actually, we were talking about sexual trauma and getting rid of that yesterday.
Yes.
And indeed, that this was something that came up, is that it scars you on the inside, not just physically, but it actually is a penetrating force on your very soul, and it leaves an imprint. And right. It is possible to heal that, except it requires extraordinary love and empathy and intense sharing, and the sharing has to go both ways. It's like Your love and empathy for somebody else can actually be replicated, transmuted, and then pushed aside and then absorbed by other people, much like psychopathic scumbaggery can.
But on a positive level, you're right. That's very well said.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, this reminds me as well. So, have you ever seen the Robert Rodriguez film From Dusk Till Dawn, where a bunch of criminals with I think it's Quentin Tarantino and George Clooney? They're these criminals, and they escape to Mexico, and they go to this this bar called the Titty Twister, and unbeknownst to them, this bar is actually the very top of an ancient Incan pyramid, and it's inhabited, and all the bar staff are vampires. What? And they lock the door in the middle of the night. Every night, they lock the door, and they eat everybody inside. They steal all the shipments off of the truckers and all the bikers and everything like that, and then they open the doors again the next day for the next round of people to come in for them to feed off.
Oh, my God.
Now, during one of the climaxes of the film where they were locked in a room about to come out and try and attack these vampires, one of them is a preacher who's lost his faith. And I think George Clooney says to him, if there is a hell and these sons of bitches are from it, then there's got to be a heaven, Jacob. There's got to be.
Mm. And bars actually are like a watering hole for them. Prisons are probably the most prolific area for them to get the food that they're looking for. But people's guard typically goes way down when they drink a lot of alcohol. That's why they call it spirits. This is just a way of connecting us with the demonic parasites. Yeah.
I just want to say something about the soul plexus and the chakras.
Yeah.
It's in my book where people reported having what I call a dark side of Cupid relationship with somebody who was a psychic or an energy vampire. A lot of times their complaints had to do with solar plexus having unusual sensations, or the entity was latching on their solar plexus, sometimes the back of their heart or their neck or the genitals. And so when you interact with one of these, like, let's say, hosted people or the archontic parasited partner who acts like sometimes a psychopath, except instead of just being a simple psychopath, a lot of times they have these paranormal capabilities where the entity within them could literally astral travel and connect with the other person sexually, like in their dreams or in the astral or whatever. And then they create these psychic links to them. And the psychic links are really hard to break. So they definitely link on to chakras, and that's one of their hallmarks.
Yeah, and I see that a lot in clients that I work with. The people in their lives that were the most problematic, especially if it was a relationship that was, you know, up and down, with that person being oftentimes an abuser of alcohol or some other drug that left them open to that type of possession, that the person will have all kinds of what I call energy bridges, or some people call them cords, connected into that person, usually from the solar plexus down to the sexual center.
Now, is it possible to relieve yourself of one's infection?
Sure. Yes.
If you absolutely. I mean, are we talking like exorcism here?
No, it's really a matter of, first of all, acknowledging there's a problem, right? Kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous, you have to acknowledge that you're being messed with and manipulated, and perhaps even serving these beings. And then you have to start clearing whatever traumas are in your soul, whatever pain is lurking that hasn't been healed. Get through that process. It takes a while, too, and just keep chipping away at it. And the more clear you get, the more you can connect with your higher self or your divine inner self and live from that space. And then when these beings attempt to manipulate you, you'll be able to recognize sooner and sooner their presence and their energy. And you simply tell them, I'm not going to play your game. Go away.
Another trick I learned is to say, I am sovereign. I am sovereign. I am sovereign. So be it. And they don't like that because they don't want you to be sovereign.
Well, you know, that's kind of like the government in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, people who work for the government and these high levels of power are so beneath the rest of us. Hence, as above, they're so below us. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We want to get into this even more intensely because there are some that believe that there is a war coming, a spiritual war, and we'd best be armed to the teeth. And we'll see if we can find out from our panel here what kind of weapons that you can employ to protect yourself from infection and also to take the fight to the enemy. Back in a minute.
Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.